This week on the Jock and Nerd podcast, we head to Arrakis to hook up with my spice dealer as we review Dune Part 2, plus updates on James Gunn's Superman movie, our first look at the Crow remake, there's actually two dinosaur movies coming out next year, and more, all in this edition of the Jock and Nerd Weekly for Monday, March 4th, 2024.
Hi, this is Gilbert Gottfried, and you're listening to the Jock and Nerd Podcast. Why? I don't know.
Check. Check one. All right. This is for all you fans out there. Let's give it up.
Yeah, what's up, listener? Thanks for pressing play, and welcome to the Jock and Nerd Podcast, where we give you comic book and superhero TV and movie news, reviews, and whatever we choose.
Jock and Nerd.
My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the jock.
And he's a nerd.
And joining us, he may be a prophet. Some call him the Quizach Ruggeratch. He is the last of the House Atreides nuts.
I got one for you.
Yeah.
Is he Ruag Adib?
Yeah, he's Ruag Adib or Lisan El Rugboy. His name is Rugboy. What's up, Rugs? We could went on and on with that. There's so many ways.
Beer is the mind killer.
Call me the Imremen. I live in the desert. Atreides nuts is pretty good, though.
Atreides nuts.
Yeah, that's what? Atreides what?
Atreides nuts. They should use that in the movie.
I was really disappointed that line wasn't in the movie. I was looking forward to it, but whatever. Maybe in the next one.
Yeah, it's like someone kills Duke Leto, and then the fucking Baron's like, Atreides nuts.
Yeah, Bautista should have said it. It's like, I'm going to squash these Atreides nuts. Anyways, we'll get to that later. We got a couple things to warm up with in some news. Let's do the news.
The Jock and Nerd Podcast.
I figure it's time to check in with James Gunn Superman, because there have been a couple of updates, a couple of progress, a little bit of progress. Like 2 weeks ago, they had a read through and then they took this cast photo, kind of canned casual selfie. It was fun to see everybody together. But then last week, James Gunn posts on social media an image of his Superman logo on the crest. We'll get to that in a minute. With this text, he writes, "Overjoyed to be announcing the start of principal photography on Superman today.
Geek boner.
February 29th, which just so happens to be coincidentally an unplanned Superman's birthday." And then he goes, "When I finished the first draft of the script, I called the film Superman Legacy. By the time I locked the final draft, it was clear the title was Superman. Making our way to you July 2025. So, a lot of fun things there. Let's start with what he wrote. So happy Superman turned 86, by the way, on February 29th. Happy 86th birthday to Superman. That's crazy. Anthony, what do you think? This thing's actually happening. Are you excited? And what do you think of the title change from Superman Legacy to Superman?
I am intrigued to see James Gunn do Superman, because it doesn't feel like something he would normally take a hold of. So I'm curious on that note. Superman's, an iconic character, so hopefully he can do it right. As far as the name change, I like just going with Superman. I didn't think, like, Superman Legacy, whatever. Just call it Superman. So it's simpler is better.
I agree. That title never really sat right with
me. Yeah, I never really liked it either, the Legacy thing. I don't understand why
it sounded like it was, if you're trying to start something new, why does it sound like it's part of something else, or like a third movie? Now, the original, Christopher Reeve, is called Superman. Great movie. This one, I like it. Superman. Ruggs, what do you think? This movie is being made. Now it's called Superman.
Okay.
The logo's a little weird, though.
Well, let's talk about the S. Like, we have a picture of an S on a suit, and there's snow on it. The S, very similar to the S logo from the Kingdom Come run of comics.
Yeah, it's missing a piece, but
where it's just like the top of the curve, the bottom of the S is missing. Now, you know, if you don't know that story, it's like in the future. It's an older retired Superman. There's a new group of heroes and they're a little violent, get out of control. He's got to come out of retirement, bring back the Justice League, fix all the shit. Do you think, Ruggs, that he just liked how this S looked, or is there some kind of metaphorical thing going on with the Kingdom Come story and this movie?
Did you see the suit?
No, well, there were these leaks, but then I heard they weren't real. I heard it was AI. It looked very real.
Oh, really? It wasn't real?
It's that picture of that bright suit with the short cape, right?
And yes.
There's like a watermark on it. I believe this is real because it's posted from James Gunn. I don't know about the rest of that shit.
So the short cape is not real.
I don't know. They just started filming on February. Okay. So I don't know. I don't know where that picture came from. I don't think it's real. I think somebody made it.
Oh, okay.
The short cape looked weird. I hope the short cape's not real.
I don't like the short cape.
No, it was way too short.
It shouldn't be that short. That looks like a stupid cape if it's that short.
It should have hit the ground almost or just.
It should at least fall between his knees.
Yes. Yeah.
It doesn't have to hit the ground, but at least it has to reach the bottom of his knees.
What do you guys think of
Oh, yeah, that is a short cape.
Right? It's a short cape. What do you think? Do you think that's a real photo? I don't think that's real. I think somebody tried.
That might be real.
Somebody tried.
No.
Because that
could be AI, but if it's real, then he just fucked up majorly. If he did the short cape like that.
I mean, that suit's really bright. This S isn't as bright, but maybe that's just what they treated the picture. Anthony, what do you think of the S and the snow? What does the snow mean?
Well, didn't the snow, that was a Man of Steel where the ship crashed or whatever. Remember?
Like, is he packed in ice with fish or is it like Fortress of Solitude? Is that what they're alluding to?
I think it was
Man of Steel.
This scene was filmed at Pike Place in Seattle.
Oh, where they throw fish at
they
you.
They threw
gotta,
him,
gotta,
yeah.
He's got to catch it with his mouth.
Yeah. The logo's a little strange. I do see the Kingdom Come similarity, but it doesn't look like an S anymore. You can still kind of make it out, but
it gets abstract. It gets abstract.
It's like an abstract S. Does it mean hope? Remember that? Man of Steel?
Yes.
It's not an S.
That's still going to be a thing.
It means House of L.
This color grading, though, like, kind of gives me like Zack Snyder vibes. Anybody else? I thought he was going to brighten things up.
I don't know. We're analyzing this thing. That's
this is all we have is this one picture that's posted by James Gunn. Okay, let's talk about this cast because. This cast, it's a huge cast. It's wild. Is it too big? I don't know. I want to ask you guys. Here's the official cast. David Corn Sweat as Superman. Nicholas Holt as Lex Luthor.
Need that.
Skylar Gisondo as Jimmy Olsen.
Okay.
Isabel Merced as Hawkgirl.
Okay, that's when you start getting into, there's additional characters here.
Sarah Sampaio as Eve Tessmacher.
Tessmacher!
Edie Gathidi as Mr. Terrific. We got additional characters. Maria Gabriel DeFaria as the engineer. Rachel Brosnahan as Lois Lane. Need the Lois Lane. Nathan Fillion as Guy Gardner. Anthony Kerrigan as Metamorpho. And Terrence Rosemore as Otis Graves. Not only is Tessmacher back, Otis is back. And they just announced today a guy who's on The Wire and he's on the Jack Ryan show, Wendell Pierce, will be Perry White. The editor of the Daily Planet. That's 12 people, okay? It's a lot of people, but is it really?
A lot of people.
But I would argue, like, Star Wars had a lot of people.
Well, you're going to need, no matter what you do, you're going to need the guy playing Perry White.
Right.
You're going to need Lois, Jimmy Olsen, and Superman. You need those characters.
There's a trio.
You need Lex.
You need the bad guy.
And so now, how many superfluous characters? Otis, you need.
So Otis and Tessmacher are tied to Lex, and then you have all these heroes. You have Hawkgirl,
Mr. Terrific.
So I guess
you just have like these three characters plus Nathan Fillion. So you got four characters that are...
Guy Gardner, Metamorpho. Isn't Metamorpho a bad guy?
He is.
Yeah.
And the engineer, I think, is another villain. So you have like three villains, two villain sidekicks, a bunch of heroes. It's a lot going on here. Unless they're all cameos. And there's no casting of like a Ma or Pa Kent. So maybe we're not going to get his origin again. And it's just going to jump in is what he said.
I'm reading here. Plus all these, you have all these characters. You do have Perry White, who's not listed on that thing.
Yeah, Wendell he just got added today. Then
James Gunn's brother, Sean Gunn.
Oh, who's Sean Gunn playing?
Maxwell Lord.
Oh, that's right. He's in the fucking movie too. Guy. That's 13
and
people.
Millie Alcock as Kara.
And possibly Millie Alcock as Supergirl would make 14 fucking characters. I mean,
it's a lot of characters.
It's a lot. But like, Dune has a lot of characters. Star Wars has a lot of characters. There's a way to do this.
Where but not work. This many, like, not, main no. characters? Yeah. Big
it's,
characters?
It's a little odd. The amount of villains is one thing, but it's a little odd the amount of heroes in this, too. You right. having Hawkgirl and Green Lantern in it.
And I guess I understand he's trying to establish this is a universe where these superheroes already exist. But, you know, if they're just quick cameos, that's fine. But
like Watchmen had a lot of characters.
Watchmen right? had a lot of characters. But then you have like Eternals that had like 10 motherfucking people and they didn't really do.
I mean, James Gunn is good with ensemble casts, although mm-hmm. it's odd to think of a Superman movie as having an ensemble cast.
It's like a Suicide Squad cast or something, right? With all these fucking characters.
Yeah, we'll see. The whole project is interesting, I think.
Like how much?
So you open the movie with Superman beating up Metamorpho, right?
Yeah, okay.
And then fucking Hawkgirl comes in to help out.
Okay.
And she fucks off, and then maybe Guy Gardner shows up, and they're like, all right, we'll take this guy, Superman, thanks, and they go away, and then you don't see him for the rest of the movie.
Possible. That's the fear is like how much screen time is actually gonna be left for Superman Clark Kent, which is what you want to see instead of it being like an ensemble thing. But they're all together and they're shooting. It's happening. We still got a long way to go. Now you may get actual set leaks and pictures.
Okay,
keep an eye out for those. Listener, let us know what you think. Are you excited for Superman? It's just Superman now. Join this conversation. Join the Facebook group. It's called Jock and Nerd Nation.
Jock and Nerd.
It's an exclusive closed group just for you, just for the listener. Lots of fun in there. Spoiler threads and lots of fun things to do. Geek out. Okay, let's move on to this next thing. Did you know this year, on the same day, The Crow remake is coming out and Bad Boys 4, June 7th, 2024. I feel like these are two movies that we all forgot are still happening. But they're both coming out on the same day. And Vanity Fair gives us our first look at The Crow remake with Stellan Skarsgård as The Crow. You guys get a look at these photos.
Oh, yeah.
I have, yes.
Yes. Anthony, we reviewed The Crow. I love The Crow.
You love The Crow.
I love The Crow.
We both love The Crow. It was in our tournament.
Did you? Yeah. Were you a fan of The Crow before that, or did we like turn you on to The Crow?
You guys put me on to The Crow.
Okay.
I never had seen The Crow, and then I watched it because of you guys. I appreciated the movie. I don't want to say it's like my thing.
Yeah,
for sure.
I mean, but Brandon Lee. You know, Brandon. But having watched that and seeing these photos, what are your first thoughts here of what this Crow looks like in this remake?
I mean, I can't unsee the image that you just put in here of what the image of Bill Skarsgård as The Crow looks like.
Yes, it nails it, kind of. You've probably seen this meme. Read it. What does it say?
Bill Skarsgård is Matthew Lillard as Jared Leto was the Joker in The Crow.
Nailed it.
Oh, shit. You couldn't be more bad than this. Like, let me just say this, okay?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so in the realm of The Crow, so James Obar wrote this novel. It was a catharsis for him. He was going through something, and this was his way of getting it out on paper. It was a drug-fueled, gothic, emotional adventure.
Didn't he, like, lose his girlfriend, too? And like that's
yeah, something
all this
like that,
of
course, yeah. Something related to that, but basically it was like an exercise in getting over something. And the whole book has lyrics from The Cure in it.
Yes. Yeah.
Joy Division.
Yeah.
It has gothic music in it, like goth, new wave, like dance hall stuff. And when they did the soundtrack, they even got The Cure on the soundtrack.
The soundtrack is amazing.
It's like Fascination Street is like one of the songs that like inspired the book. And then they did a song that was like Fascination Street in called Burn.
Yeah.
So anyhow, that is the essential version of The Crow. It should be a period piece in the 80s during that goth era, the early goth era, the combat boot goth era, you know?
Yeah, 80s, early 90s. So it has to stay there is basically what you're saying.
Yeah, the minute that you try and like establish a Crow, even the first Crow movie outside of that, you're already in the wrong direction. Like you're already so off base that you're not even The Crow anymore. And so, now when you do the Jared Leto Joker, like, the Joker came out and nobody liked it. Why would you do the same thing and expect anything different from reactions to people?
So what's interesting in these photos of the remake, before he even becomes the Crow, he has all these face tattoos. He's all Post Malone'd up.
Yeah.
He's got all these tattoos. And I guess when he becomes the Crow, he gets the dark eyes. But, like, these are, yeah, so I don't know. He's got the little smile. Like, here's the thing. Stellan Skarsgård's a very, very, he's very good. He was, I think.
Is it Bill Skarsgård?
Not Stellan. Stellan is in Dune. Bill.
I mean, he's a good actor.
Is a good actor. Yes.
It's not his fault.
Yeah.
So the Crow is not the superhero.
Yeah.
The Crow is the Crow that brings you back to life.
Yeah.
Eric Draven is that character, all right? That character that was played by Brandon Lee to a degree, and even Brandon Lee didn't really play Eric Draven the way it's supposed to be, but, like, Eric Draven is a specific character, all right? If you're going to do the Crow, and you're going to do Eric Draven, and he's a goth thing, you can't just update it and do this, like, Juggalo Joker thing. It's not going to work.
I mean, these are just pictures, right? But if it's a dark romance, tragic kind of dark movie.
But then you've just destroyed, you sucked out the reason why it's cool.
Yeah, if they set it now and use, like, contemporary music, like, I think you're right. Like, it needs to be in that time.
You could do, like, another Crow later, but you can't do Eric Draven again. Like, you got to do Eric Draven as Eric Draven. And then there have been other times a Crow has brought someone up for vengeance.
Right, right.
Like, it's been happening since the dawn of time in the lore of the Crow.
Yes, and those are the other movies. But
those are the other zombies. But this is Eric Draven's story.
Yes, this is Eric.
And not only that, but okay, think about this. Brandon Lee is the Crow, right? When Heath Ledger did the Joker.
Yeah.
He modeled himself after the Crow.
Yeah.
He had the same stringy hair and the eye makeup that was the same way, kind of, you know. And so the popularity of that Joker and Brandon Lee are like fucking, how are you going to go in another direction? It's just stupid. I don't know. I just think it's stupid.
This guy doesn't have the long hair, and I hate this fucking
mullet.
This haircut is ridiculous. Yes, it's a mullet, but then it's like there's a sharp line where it's shaved and then it's not shaved. Like, what the fuck's going on? What kind of haircut is this? This is what the kids are wearing now? The fuck is this? You need the hair. And I will agree that the Cure is synonymous with the Crow. The Crow is synonymous. You think about the Crow.
Like, I
think
I don't know if it's a period piece, but it seems very like 2024. It doesn't seem 1984 like it should be, but whatever, you know.
This is gonna fail,
regardless of even if it's good, it's turned off so many people already.
Well, have you seen the comments from Alex Proyas, director of the first Crow, and then the girl who's in the first movie, and they're both like digging on it and bashing it?
Oh, Alex Proyas hates this.
Yeah, apparently he's just he's a little bit of a crazy man.
He made two phenomenal movies, and then he just
stopped doing anything.
Well, then he made that Gods of Egypt movie.
That was written by the guys who wrote Madam Web and Morbius also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he doubled down on, like, how he wasn't bad.
I mean,
and I was like, all right, dude, you made a bad movie. It's okay. Like,
you can admit it.
Yes. No, he can't. He can't admit it. I love the Crow. This doesn't look great so far. I'm going to wait for a trailer. It's just still images, but I don't even know if people know this is coming out.
But it's
out.
Like so easy. Like, why not just, because they didn't do a one-to-one adaptation of the book. And if they would have done that, which they didn't do yet.
Yeah.
Like, even though Brandon Lee's Crow, like, it had the essence of the book to a degree.
Yeah.
They still didn't do an adaptation of the book.
Would you redo like a straight adaptation with the same music from the first movie?
Yes, I would go and get all of the greats.
Yeah.
I would get fucking Typo Negative.
And then it becomes a period piece almost.
Yes.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
Now, Bad Boys 4 reminds me that I still got to watch Bad Boys 3. I heard it's very good. I've not seen it. But the same guys are coming back to do that. And they just finished shooting that.
It's going up against Bad Boys 4?
Yes. the crux.
Not a chance. I think it loses out.
It's going to lose big time.
Is Martin coming back for that one?
I think they're both in it. Yeah, so already not
the reaction, I mean, you could hear it in Rug Boy's tone.
Yeah.
The reaction to this picture is just, everyone's just going nuts over it.
They're like, what?
But what, like, is this? Well, it just... It just mystifies me how everyone hated Jared Leto's Juggalo Joker.
It does,
and this is basically the same thing.
Exactly, should have the same reaction, and I felt that way a little bit. I'm like, oh, this again.
It does look like it's. I'll say it looks like it's trying really hard.
Yeah, and to be
edgy.
Yeah, maybe a little unoriginal, or I don't know.
I was just thinking about how does he have those tattoos, or did he have to sit up in a makeup chair every day and get those tattoos?
Oh, they just stick them right on you.
They laser printed out. They got a skin laser printer. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, those aren't real.
Okay.
But that's Bill. There's a lot of Skarsgård. His father is in the movie. This is Bill, who played Pennywise in It. He can do weird things with his eyes.
The Skarsgård family and their arch nemesis, the Skotchgård family.
Oh, the Skotchgård. But they'll keep the lint off your furniture.
Yeah, they're very sticky people.
Yes, they're very Scotch. They hate the three M's. Okay, finally, let's finish up with some dinosaur talk. A little follow-up on our last week's topic of Gareth Edwards getting the job to direct the new Jurassic World movie. And we were having fun with the title. Like, what do? You go Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, Jurassic Universe. Never even thinking to go the other way. And apparently that's what they're doing from scooper Daniel Rickman. He's saying, and this has been going around for a bit, I guess, the upcoming Jurassic World sequel will reportedly be called Jurassic City. Jurassic City. And it says in this article, Jurassic City will not have a vibe similar to Escape from New York, debunking widespread speculation online. That's unfortunate, because that could have been a fucking awesome.
That would have been awesome, yeah.
How about, imagine it's just the Flintstones.
Oh, no. They went too far back. People are pushing cars with their feet, and there's giant slabs of ribs. No, but Jurassic City could be an awesome, like, escape from a dinosaur city where now the dinosaurs have taken over, and you're just focused on these characters trying to get out alive and all sorts of craziness. But,
and then you bring them a bunch of tuna, and then you shoot them on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Okay. Don't shoot the dolphins. What do you guys think?
Seen this movie already. Well,
yeah. Oh, also, it has been pointed out there is a B movie called Jurassic City. If this is the actual title, I think somebody should have Googled some shit before locking it down, because there is like a bad movie called Jurassic City from 2015.
Is a city in a city's bigger than a park? It's still scaled it up.
This is a movie.
Is it a bigger than a world?
City is no. It's going back. It's going backwards.
Going back. Jurassic Block.
Jurassic Land.
Jurassic Living Room. Just keep bringing it down. I don't know. This Jurassic
Jurassic Laundromat.
What, Anthony? Yeah. What if it was called Jurassic City? What does that tell you? What do you expect?
I mean, you would have to imagine it's set in a city that's taken over by dinosaurs.
Sure.
Then again, we saw what was the last one? Jurassic World?
Dominion?
Dominion?
Yeah.
And we thought we were going to get dinosaurs, and it was really about giant bugs.
It was about grasshoppers instead. they tricked us.
They tricked us. So.
Yeah, what are they doing?
Yeah.
You never know with these guys. They're silly people over there. So.
Okay, so then I got to mention, also coming around the same time that movie comes out, there's a competing dinosaur movie coming on from this guy, David Robert Mitchell, called Flowervale Street. And it's described as a dinosaur movie set in the 80s, starring Anne Hathaway and Oscar Isaac from Bad Robot and Warner Brothers. This guy did this movie, Under the Silver Lake. Has anybody seen that? It's fucking crazy, with Andrew Garfield. Brooks, no. Have you seen that?
No, what's it about?
Under the Silver Lake is like this weird mystery that he gets in, but it's very...
Like Twin Peaks or something?
Yes, it's a very Twin Peaks-ish, and you're not exactly sure what the fuck is going on.
Those movies annoy me, but like, yeah.
I know they annoy you. I love those movies. It's kind of a mindfuck movie.
Yeah.
It's got a great, like... And he also did It Follows, but...
Oh, I saw that movie.
Competing dinosaur movies. I wonder why more people don't make dinosaur movies from big budget. Why is it just... The Jurassic people.
Well, because we were overexposed to dinosaurs, I guess. We got so many, like, as I said, they started making these nature documentaries with dinosaurs.
That's true.
You can just see them.
That's
like, they're on every every streaming has their own, like, one with David Attenborough talking like they're actually real creatures and shit.
Listen, with anything David Attenborough narrates, it's just fucking absorbing. You just got to stop and you listen. You're like, oh my God, look at this.
Is this the one where the dinosaurs fuck?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
No, that's that other movie. With the,
That's Tammy and the T-Rex?
Tammy and the T-Rex, yes.
That's when people fuck the dinosaurs.
Anyways, dinosaur movies coming out, Crow remakes, lots of crazy shit. Get ready.
Remakes, remakes, remakes.
We're going to take a break here. We're going to play some promos. We're going to come back. Get your spice bong ready, listener. So we're heading to Arrakis right after this.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Was A Quiet Place inspired by Signs, It Comes at Night, and War for the Planet of the Apes? Was Ready Player One influenced by Avatar, Wreck-It Ralph, and The Last Starfighter? Is The Hurricane Heist more influenced by Sharknado or Geostorm? These are the kinds of questions my guest co-hosts and I discuss on my podcast, Piecing It Together. Every week, we look at a new movie and try to figure out what other movies inspired it, whether it's the story, the character development, tone, or even use of music. Every movie was influenced by something that came before, and we want to figure out what. Check out Piecing It Together on your favorite podcast app or check us out on piecingpod.com. You can also follow us on social media at piecingpod. Piecing It Together is a part of the All Points West podcast network.
Have you ever been reading through a stack of comics and thought, maybe I should see what this Arkham Asylum game is all about? Or been playing Marvel vs. Capcom and felt like you were at a real disadvantage since you didn't know who half the characters were? Well, Play Comics is the show for you. I'm Chris, and each episode we take a look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. So whether you know the comics and want to know how all these games work, or you know the games and want to find out where all this craziness came from, go check out Play Comics at playcomics.com or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Doc and Nerd.
Listener, if you enjoy the show, this is a great time to join our fan club and give back. Visit jockandnerd.com/Patreon.
Jock and Nerd!
And there's a bunch of tiers. You can sign up for a monthly or annual basis, and you get benefits like access to an exclusive podcast feed, but the shows come out a little bit early. There's some bonus content. There's some stuff that's recorded that's not aired on the other feed. Lots of fun stuff over there. You can join us for our monthly Discord hangouts.
What about reviews, Imran?
Oh, there's bonus movie reviews over there for our pay, because there's a tier where you can pick any movie you want for us to watch and review. And some of those are on the main feed. Some of those are only on the Patreon feed. So there's bonus movie reviews. Discord hangout, like I mentioned, this month will be March 21st. It's a Thursday, 8 p.m. Central Time. And all this other fun stuff. We appreciate any and all support and the continued support from our awesome Patreon community, jockandnerd.com/Patreon. All right, let's do it. Let's go to Arrakis. We are here. We are going to be reviewing Dune Part 2. Here's your spoiler alerts.
Strap yourselves in, you fucks. Spoiler time.
Dune Part 2 is the sequel to Dune Part 1. It is the second part of an adaptation of the 1965 novel Dune by Frank Herbert. Herbert went on to write 5 sequels to Dune, just so you know. They're called Dune Messiah, Children of Dune, God Emperor of Dune, Heretics of Dune, and Chapter House Dune. Interesting titles. On Rotten Tomatoes, Dune 2 currently sitting at a 93%. Tomatometer, 8.4 out of 10. Audience score, 95%. This beats out the Rotten Tomatoes score for the first movie, which was 83% tomatometer, 90% audience score. It's now 93, 95. This movie was made for $190 million. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money, but it does really well. Opening weekend, making $82.5 million. Opening weekend, that gives it the biggest opening of 2024. I believe it's the biggest opening for Denis Villeneuve, the director, and a bunch of other records. Right now, worldwide, it's sitting at $182 million, just after like 4 days, 5 days, right? It's not bad. The first Dune...
No, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's very good, especially in this down theater market. Like, they really needed, like, this is the big blockbuster everybody's been waiting for. The first Dune, if you remember, came out in 2021. It was still pandemic times. It was a day and date release in the theaters and on HBO Max.
Yeah, it sapped some of their juice.
Yeah, so that one opened at 41 million. Dune 2 doubles that. That one finishes at 433 million. I think this thing could finish.
Yeah, this is going to crush it.
I think it finished closer to your 800, 900, maybe Dune, even
Dune,
billion.
The first one only did 100, a little over 100 million domestically, and this one's at 82.
It's already at 82.
And the hype for this movie, you know, the feedback, everyone's, I think this movie's going to have some legs.
Speaking of hype, it also, you can compare it to Oppenheimer, which opened, now that's R-rated, also long, that opened to 82.4 million. It just edged out the Oppenheimer opening, and Oppenheimer finished at like $950 million, that fucking movie. So like, this movie should make $1 billion. I think. Anyways.
Oh, $1 billion. Imran.
No?
I think it's 800.
You think it can get 800, 900?
That's as far as it's going to get.
Billion's hard, man.
Okay, Oppenheimer made 950. I think it makes at least 950.
Oh, that's true.
Okay. Yeah, right? The movie.
Yeah, I guess that's a comparable. All
right. Right, that would be your compare.
But there's not an event like Barbenheimer.
It's not an event, and that one is all talking heads, and this has got action. That one's R-rated. Similar run times. That one's even a little longer. So if that's your comparison, I'm like, this Dune should easily make 900.
It's in the realm of possibilities, yeah, for sure.
Dune 2, of course, directed, co-produced by Denis Villeneuve.
I call him Denis.
D Villeneuve, D to the V, Denis. Is that how you pronounce it? I've been pronouncing it wrong.
His name is Denis Villeneuve.
The Denis.
That's how we pronounce it here.
He co-wrote the screenplay with John Spates. You got music by Hans Zimmer. And then a stellar cast here. Timothy Chalamet as Paul Atreides. Zendaya as Chani. Rebecca Ferguson as his mom, Lady Jessica. Javier Bardem as Stilgar. Josh Brolin as Gurney. Austin Butler as Fade Rautha. Florence Pugh as Princess Irulan. Dave Bautista as Raban. Christopher Walken as the Emperor. Stellan Skarsgård. Here's the Skarsgård I was talking about. As Baron Harkonnen. And that's really your main cast there with a cameo by Anya Taylor-Joy. We'll get into that. She's in it for a second. Anthony.
Yes.
How was your theater experience for this one?
Oh, I saw it on a Thursday night at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Theater was probably less than half full, but that's not unsurprising on a Thursday at 10.
Okay.
Honestly, kind of a very relaxed theater, not really crazy or anything, but I think probably a product of
the time.
Booking a 3-hour movie at 10 p.m. Yeah. So maybe the earlier showings were more packed.
I saw it on Thursday at 8 p.m. It was a packed theater, and these fucking Dune popcorn buckets were all around me, like right next to me. It was kind of weird. I felt uncomfortable. I was like, oh my God, the guy's putting his hand in the bucket. I don't think there's any popcorn in there. I don't know what's going on.
You have to lube up first.
Everybody, these things sold the fuck out. I should have bought one. I never bought one.
Now you want the butthole.
Anyways, the fucking Dune popcorn bucket was everywhere. Tell us what happens, Anthony, in this PG-13.
You didn't ask me about my
theater experience, Russ?
Why did you gloss over me?
I was going to ask you later, but anything interesting happened?
All right. No. I went earlier than all of you. That's the only difference.
Saw it first, I think. Right away, I
saw it earlier than all of you. I saw the early morning, the first matinee, and there was half the theater was full. I saw it in Dolby, and that's all I'm going to need to say about that.
Yeah, and that popcorn bucket was only at AMC, so you have to go to AMC to get the popcorn. Anthony, what happens in this PG-13 2-hour, 46-minute Dune Part 2?
Well, Timothée Chalamet, playing Paul Atreides, has been exiled or has left his land after the, or left his kingdom. I guess you could say. I don't even know what the fuck to call it. He's stuck in the desert with a bunch of people that are called the Fremen, and House Harkonnen's taken over the planet, taken over the spice mining, and Paul Atreides wants to get revenge on them for killing his dad and taking over, and this whole scheme and plot to take out House Atreides. So he's teamed up with the Fremen. The Fremen think he's Jesus
because of the witches.
Yeah, and there's witches, and yeah, and there's lots of attacking of spice things and loud music and blue eyes and Jesus metaphors and
giant worms.
giant worms, riding worms, and all sorts of shit.
Windshield wiper fluid. Windex.
Windex.
Yeah, Windex probably featured. Okay, did you like the first one?
No.
Okay.
I didn't like the first one.
Did you remember the first one watching this?
It started coming back to me. I think I read, right. Luckily, I was sitting on the shitter.
Yeah.
The day of the movie, and I saw an article on The Ringer that kind of recapped the first one.
Yeah.
So I read that real quick, and I went, okay. Now I kind of understand.
Okay.
I remember everything going in. And
all right. Yeah, after the nearly 3 hours on Arrakis, what'd you think coming out of this?
Yeah, no, this one's, it's pretty damn good. I'll give it credit. I liked it a lot more than the first one. I think this one obviously had way more action.
Yeah.
I think the first one was paced weirdly, but because I saw the first one, I could kind of follow along in this one, what was going on, the names and all that. It was a little bit easier for me to follow. It's shot beautifully, great cinematography, great score, great actors, some really good action scenes, a pretty interesting story. I'm not the biggest fan of the way Denis Villeneuve edits and paces his movies.
Yeah.
Like I don't fully, I wasn't loving every minute of this movie.
Yeah.
But I can certainly recognize like the technical achievement that has been made. I mean, I feel like I think I said it in the instant reaction, but I wrote it down. I feel like this is the film snobs' big blockbuster.
Yeah.
Because it has all the elements of a big blockbuster, but it's made really well. I mean, those some kinda of those
like
shots
a Christopher
in the desert.
Nolan movie or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's some of those shots in the desert with the sun and I mean everything. You know, everything looks real.
Yeah. Yes.
It doesn't have that fake gloss that a lot of Marvel CGI type movies.
Yeah.
I just don't love the editing and pacing that Denny has.
Okay.
Like sometimes action scenes just kind of end really quick.
Abruptly. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Things are just. Scenes are cut together pretty abruptly. It's a little different. It's not your typical filmmaking, which is a little jarring for me. But overall, I mean, it's a wonder for sure. It's a movie that you can't help but appreciate.
It's how it impressed you. You would say,
yeah, okay. I would say, yeah. It's an impressive movie.
Okay, Ruggs, opening thoughts. You have read the book, correct?
No.
Oh, you haven't.
I tried to read the book.
Okay, I haven't read the book.
I could never get through it. It's so hard, so dense. But when you talk about being assaulted by a million characters and trying to learn languages, and it's just a lot. So I relegated myself to the miniseries that came out on Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
That was like had zero budget.
Yeah.
But was a very faithful adaptation of Dune.
I mean, I felt like you were the Dune guy amongst us. And like,
yeah,
you got
I
me
like
into
Dune.
It,
and
right?
You want to know, the more that you like, Dune is so ripped off. Like the Matrix ripped off a lot of Dune.
Yeah.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
Star Wars ripped
off a lot
of things.
Ripped
Dune.
Off a lot of Dune.
So, like, Dune really is like a big predecessor. So I think that if you have... Like a Princess of Mars.
Yep.
And you got Dune. And so many of those, so many things come from both of those. And I think that Princess of Mars and Dune, definitely Star Wars. Matrix definitely goes from Dune.
Yeah.
Like everything that happens in the Matrix.
Yeah.
Happens in Dune.
The one, the chosen one, the prophecy, the prophet,
yes,
all that shit.
Absolutely. You have to choose your path.
So how did you feel about part two? Did he, how did he do with this one?
I'll tell you this, okay? For this particular movie series, if you divorce yourself from Dune, like the story of Dune, which, as I said, I saw the miniseries, which sticks to it pretty good. And then from what I've watched a bunch of YouTube videos, of course, to try to get really acclimated into the world. If you really love Dune, the best YouTuber to watch is Comic Book Girl 19, otherwise known as Danica.
Oh, okay. She's
fucking loves Dune.
Okay.
And she talks about Dune and you understand it so much more after she talks about it. She fucking loves Dune.
Yeah.
So,
say that name again.
Comic Book Girl 19.
Yeah. She's been around for a while.
Okay. Yeah. So They were going to make a movie of Dune with Jodorowsky and Mobius.
We'll who get designed into that because I watched the documentary. And what are we watching? I want to mention that. It's fucking wild.
Oh, yeah. So there's so much. There's so many different ways you could go with this. And it's interesting to see the way that Denis Villeneuve made it.
Yeah. And I understand there's big changes from the book. There was big changes
absolutely,
in the first part.
So absolutely.
What did you, how did you think he handled all this?
I'm going. My critique of this is that he did overall a great job. But he made a lot of choices that subtract other things. So he had to he made a lot of cuts. Basically, he cut a lot of stuff out.
Right.
To make his movie.
Yep.
So while you're getting the meat of it, you're not getting everything that makes Dune special in it as well. Like for the Space Guild is so important. Right?
Mm-hmm. They're not in this.
So they're not even mentioned, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're mentioning the guild when they go to war with the jihad, basically, at the end of the movie. But the Space Guild, the reason why spice is so important, right?
Yeah.
Is that, number one, it prolongs your life.
Yeah.
You can use it. It makes you stronger.
Yeah.
It can give you visions of the future. It can give you, an edge.
Yeah.
If you're running a country. But the reason why everybody wants a spice is because you can't travel through space without it. And the reason why is because there was they used to have AI doing everything.
Right.
And AI rose up against them.
Right.
And they had a Terminator thing where they had to fucking wipe out all the AI. And so their answer to AI is to take human beings and basically fuck with their genetics until they become these giant computer brains. And they're these floating brains in tanks,
which is why there's that's no tech in this universe.
Yes, and they run these fucking floating brains in tanks that do all of these calculations, these computers to do all this fucking space travel.
Yeah,
they need the spice to work.
Yeah,
and it's cool. It's a cool none idea. Of that's even touched on.
No, but
and so that it gives a lot of it basically tells you why everything in Arrakis is the way it is, and Denis Villeneuve just kind of ignores that.
Yeah.
And so you're not getting into some of that uniqueness. You're kind of overshadowing it with other stuff. And this is a lot of stuff. So basically the movie in and of itself, if you don't know any of the other stuff, it's fine. It's good. I think it's very well done.
Yeah.
There's moments where you really feel you really feel connected to this movie, when he rides the sandworm for the first time, and where that some of that battle scene with Chani with the rocket launcher, and that siege that they go on and with the sandworms and they fucking fuck everything up. Those some great filmmaking there, beautiful shots.
Yeah.
So I think that if you're a person that doesn't know a lot about Dune, you'd go in and just by the spectacle of it, think it's really good. Yeah, I have issues with the pacing.
Yeah.
I have issues with him spending so much time on certain scenes that kind of seem to go on forever.
Yeah.
And then all this other stuff's on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
He's even stated that there's tons of shit that he shot that would add a lot of this Dune stuff in.
Yeah.
But he cut it out.
Yeah.
So, and I was wondering a lot of the time when I was watching this movie, I was like, why are we spending, you don't need to see this. This is we're retreading a lot of stuff from the first movie here. We need to get to the other. You literally don't see the Emperor ever in the first movie.
I mean, they're barely in. Yes. And they're barely in this.
They're barely in this.
Christopher Walken.
The Space Guild's not in it. So basically you have a Game of Thrones that's mm-hmm. and none of the pieces are on the board here. He's only going with the imminent threat. And it takes away from the complexity and the greatness that is Dune. But if you're just watching it and you're just taking it at face value, it's very good. It's a very good movie. And a lot of people love it. And a lot of people who love Dune love it, too, because the reality is the only thing that we got that was anywhere near what the source material was this shitty miniseries.
Right.
That was so low budget, but still very well acted, but very low budget.
Right.
And it's unfilmable. There's no way on God's green earth anyone can film it the way it's supposed to. So this is what we're going to get. This is the closest we're going to get. And I got to hand it to Denis is that he like for what little that he did of the Harkonnens,
yeah,
he made them at least seem threatening.
Yeah.
Like, and they're not even getting into like the crazy Harkonnen shit. Like they it's alluded to and whatever, but he's not as flamboyant or whatever. He completely made the Baron a different character, but it's effective. And so the changes that he did make work in this trilogy are going to work in this trilogy. I believe that this trilogy is going to be good, but it does not hold a candle to Lord of the Rings, which is the best, which is, I think is the best adaptation of a fucking story ever.
Yeah.
So, okay. Cause like they did it like in a way they materialized all of the essence of Lord of the Rings onto screen.
They put a lot more of the source material in it.
Yeah, did Dinas really do it? No, but it's still a great movie. You can't take that away. Like he took whatever he chopped up the best part of the meat, yeah, and he gave you the best cut, and he left all the gristle and fat. But some of that gristle and fat actually you need. But
yeah,
I think that what he gave you is it's still very effective. It's super effective and it's well done. It's artistically done, very well edited. The sound editing is amazing. It's just some of the pace where he spent time, he could have used it to kind of fill in other things. And that's the only thing I'm kind of like a little bit about.
I'll tell you what, I rewatched the first Dune like before and that movie flew by and I was like,
I did too.
I was like, fuck, this is a fucking good movie. I forgot how good this is. Like I had seen it in a while. And then I get in to see this thing, and it's a packed audience. Everybody's very responsive. And at the end, and I feel like it's been a long time that I felt this way. I was kind of
took off your pants.
I took off my pants. No, I was blown away. I was blown away for once.
You were blown away?
Yes, yes.
Wow. I fucking loved it.
I'm just gonna start there. For once, the hype, all the reviews, the criticism was actually deserved. It wasn't hyperbole. I thought. And the first word came into my mind. I know people throw this around, but I was like, this is kind of a fucking masterpiece.
I think it's a classic.
It is a visual storytelling masterpiece. This is this mm-hmm. director at the height of his talent in full control. And for all the reasons, it's epic. It's ambitious. It's gorgeous.
The CG is great.
The whole fucking theater was shaking. Like my seats were rumbling during the sandworm scene. It is an immersive world. This movie, again, did what the first movie did, is get me obsessed with Dune. It's so immersive. I was like, I didn't want it to end. I didn't think it was long. I wanted it to keep going. I was like, fuck, I need more Dune. I need to know what the fuck happens.
I think audiobooks are in your future.
I felt I might have to read these fucking books because I felt the same way after the first one. I was like, oh, you can't leave me hanging. I went and watched the David Lynch movie. And this time I was like, I need more Dune. And I watched this documentary that I'll talk about later. It was amazing.
You should watch the sci-fi
I'm going to watch that series, and then we'll talk about the other series. But I think that's what a great movie does, leave you wanting more. But, Ruggs, to your point, I thought he streamlined this dense text very well. It's Paul's story.
He focuses on Paul.
But it's easy to follow. Like Anthony,
but like, is Game of Thrones the same without all the other ancillary characters and all the machinations on?
But the themes and the layers of what he's talking about are in here in different ways. It's like the Bible smashed with Shakespeare with this sci-fi cover, right? Like the themes are there of a Messiah and religion and fanaticism and politics, right. And it's all layered. There is a like, it's not perfect. Yes. Any nitpick I have, any criticism is entirely nitpicky, but I felt like he took me to fucking Arrakis. Just like James Cameron's Avatar, sometimes it transported me. I had the same feeling with this. Like I was there and,
no, undoubtedly it is a feat that
it's the unfilmable book and he pulls it off, which is wild.
Game of Thrones in space.
Anthony, were you able to follow all the shit?
My buddy was literally said, he goes, this is this generation's Game of Thrones. And then I told him, actually, all this stuff, Dune was all before this. Like, everything's copying Dune. But yeah. Yes. I agree with both of you guys. Obviously, I don't have the context of what was cut out. So I wasn't aware of that. It did feel, for example, the Emperor.
Yeah.
That kind of just feels thrown in there.
Yeah, they should have established that way before.
Yeah, maybe right. in the first
I wasn't
movie.
Sure that that was... I don't remember if we knew that was a scheme on the Emperor's part in the first movie.
I don't think we did. I don't think we
And then you kind of get Florence Pugh in there, and she feels kind of tacked in a little bit. Obviously, all the, like, the technical stuff is really, really, really good. Really good. Yeah. I think the plot is interesting in that you do have the Jesus thing, but then you have the Bene Gesserits that are kind of this wild card.
Yeah.
And then when Paul starts to really, like, get to being the guy, Zendaya's character, Chani, starts to not like him anymore.
Yeah.
Because he's getting too power hungry, I think, where they're going with, which is a little different. Normally in these, like, Messiah type stories, the girl kind of goes along for the ride with
him. And that's a change from the book. In the book, she is entirely on board with his whole decision at the end of marrying the princess. Well,
let's talk about what Muad'Dib's goal is.
All the names, right? Yes. Well, yes.
So Paul Atreides, aka Muad'Dib.
Usul. Muad'Dib.
Lisan al-Ghaib. What else does he call that?
Lisan al-Ghaib.
Yes, Lisan al-Ghaib.
Lisan Tadarach. Yeah.
Zach Tadarach.
He has many names.
So, okay. So, at a certain point in Dune, he's with the biologist that kind of runs everything that has been assigned to him by the Emperor. And he tells him, like, you know, Dune, you know, we're trying to terraform it so, like, people can live on this planet.
Yeah.
And all of the Fremen have this, like, legend that he's going to bring oceans back to Dune.
Right.
All right. And so Chani and everybody are all on board for this fucking the grass is greener on the other side vision that they have. And so in the book and in the TV show, the miniseries, Chani's all want, they want to stop living in, like, you know, killing people and sucking their blood for water, you know?
Yeah, that's great.
They don't want to live that way anymore. They want to live like regular people. And so he brings that about. That's his whole entire mission is to bring that about. So Chani's for it. In this one, they don't really, it's murky. Like, it's murky that he wants to restore water. It's murky that he wants to restore the oceans and make, there is that vision of his sister when she's Anya Taylor-Joy fully grown with the oceans there.
Yeah.
But it's just like a little sprinkle in there, you know, but it's not like the driving force of what Muad'Dib is promising, you know? So it's like, there are some things that, like, I know from context that are there that made the movie better for me since I know it, you know, does that make sense? Or am I off base, Anthony?
No, that makes sense. That certainly makes sense.
Were you feeling that? Like, that was his main drive, that to bring the oceans back?
No, see, that I didn't know that. I thought his main drive was just getting revenge for his father.
That was one of them. Yes.
But I didn't. Yeah, it didn't hit me all the stuff that, like, he might also bring about to the world. Yeah, like, I didn't have that context at all.
He's like a troubled person.
I love this character. He's not your typical Messiah hero, right? He sees, if he makes this choice, billions of people are going to die. And I love that line.
What choice?
Yeah, he could see the future. He knows what he's going to do.
There's that point where he's in the north and he's like, if I go south, this vision of billions of people dying is going to happen. That line where he's talking to Gurney, where he's telling him, he's like, I had a vision. I saw billions of people dead at my feet. And Gurney goes, because you lost control? He goes, because I gained it. I was like, oh, fuck, that's really good. So he doesn't want to make this decision. They get bombed and he does end up going south and reluctantly starting this jihad, this holy war, that the vision he saw that he didn't want to happen. But in his point of view, he has one narrow path. Like, he only has two choices. Either I don't go and all the Fremen and the Atreides and my bloodline gets wiped out, or I have to go and billions of people will die, but I'll be able to save the Atreides bloodline and the Fremen. And it is kind of quick. I feel like he reaches that position of leadership kind of quick in the third act, where he's all of a sudden he's off to fucking stop them.
I agree. I'll add to there on it feeling quick. It felt like his turn to being, you know, he drinks the
that was
blood.
A big moment. Yes, the water of life.
And then all of a sudden it feels, you know, I didn't really understand what happened. It felt Like, he became a different guy.
Well, it's supercharged.
He does. He does because he's always been trained in a way you're not supposed to train men.
Right.
Because men can't handle the power.
She was supposed to have a daughter that was going to have a baby with Fade.
So the Bene Gesserits can control like what the sex of the baby is when they get pregnant. That's one of the things that they've learned. Like they're Jedis. The Jedis, there was ever Jedis.
Yes, they are the Jedis.
So they were but they were only female Jedis.
Yeah, I love that they hate men. It's so fun.
And and so he was taught in the ways that was illegal for her to do.
She wasn't supposed to do it, and she did it.
And she did it. And then he gets the power. He gets to drink the fucking worm urine, and he now has access to all the knowledge of the past selves.
Yeah,
anybody in his DNA. And the future.
That's when he sees his sister, and also,
and so he can't be the same person because he's got all of these different things running through him now.
And then the reveal that his mom was actually the Baron's daughter, and he's Harkonnen and Atreides. That shit was crazy. I thought Rebecca Ferguson's character was really interesting. She did a great job. She's all fucking.
What's going on there when her voice changes?
That's the voice. That's kind of like the Jedi power of when Obi-Wan is like, "These are not the droids you're looking for." That whatever she says.
That's how they stole that. The Jedi voice.
Yeah,
that's
the where Jedi they stole voice. That. You have to do it. It's a way to control people.
Like in the first movie.
Yeah.
She's like, do the voice. And he's like, no, I don't want to do it. He's like, she's like, use it on me.
Yeah.
I want to see if you can do it.
Yeah.
And he's like, pass me the glass.
Yeah.
And she's like, no. And then
he uses it to escape when they get kidnapped. He's like,
yes.
And then he finally. And then this one, the Reverend Mother in the first movie does the voice on him, makes him kneel. And then he gets his revenge at the end when he's like, silence. And she fucking flies back. That was fucking great. People cheered a number of parts in this movie in my audience. It was so much
fun. It's like the voice of God or whatever, but the Jedis use it as like just like on feeble-minded people, it controls them.
Got it. And then Chani doesn't like what he's becoming, right?
Yes.
Is that what's happening there?
Yeah, she's not down with the
movie. Yes, yeah.
She's not. She sees him as a cult or basically being power hungry or like now everyone's going to follow this guy to death, basically, right? Or whatever. I don't know. I think that's why she hates it.
I think I think the reason that she doesn't like it in this movie is that she fears change.
I think she thinks a Fremen should lead them. And he even said that in the movie, right? And he kind of becomes Fremen. But I think
it seems like she fears what one person with all that power can really do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is the only person that can actually change things.
It's like Judas to Jesus. It's kind of the same thing. Judas was trying to tell Jesus, like, calm down. They're coming for you. But he didn't listen.
Yeah, but that's not how it plays out if Villeneuve sticks to the script. They love each other. That's at the end of the day,
they have a kid in the book and stuff. Yeah.
But isn't he wanting to? Why does he want to marry the emperor's daughter?
It's a political move. To be emperor, suddenly he wants to be emperor and to rule everything. And I love that moment. Christopher Walken finally bends the knee and kisses his fucking dad's ring. And she agrees to it.
Every time Christopher Walken was on screen, I was thinking about Rugboy doing a Christopher Walken impression.
Why aren't you calling?
He's like
princess.
He's like Arrakis.
Arrakis, gotta go to Arrakis. They drank the blue juice. Christopher Walken is like,
he's like Muad'Dib.
Bring the Lisan. Why is Lisan al Gaib?
Why are you here?
Who you want to be emperor?
You brought the worms. Why?
Dude, come on. Speaking of worms, that fucking scene, was amazing. Apparently,
what was good about this movie, too, is I think the first one was almost like too serious, whereas this one you had Javier Bardem, who was just hilarious the entire time.
Yes.
And like every time Muad'Dib would do something, he'd be like, see?
See, I told you.
When they call the worm, I think it was his line. He goes, "Oh, not that one.
Not that one. The biggest.
Not
worm,
the big one."
He could have farted, and Stilgar would have been like, "As it was written." Like, it's so funny. He's like,
by the way, in the other Dune books, Stilgar's got a huge part.
Oh, really?
He's very important in.
But
in
he
the
is
other
like
book.
His mentor, right? Yeah. So the 44 days to shoot that shit. The seats are rumbling. It looked amazing. The discussion on the internet. Everyone's asked like, how you get off those fucking worms? Which is a good question. I think you just jump off.
You just jump off the side.
But they have like a whole city. They got like a whole caravan on those worms. With she's in her little basket. It's like, how the fuck they get that on the worm? I don't know. You just run and jump. But I kept thinking about like these worms are swimming through it like water. Like it's so interesting. It's so cool looking. And then when they bring the three of them to attack, fucking what a scene.
So do you want to know what worms eat?
What do they eat? People?
They eat sand plankton.
Oh. Okay.
So they're more like whales than anything
else. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, and it's like you're surfing.
And
it's,
I think that's why I love Villeneuve's design choice on this, because he has them have like these like long, like kind of like hairs inside their mouth.
Yeah.
That look like baleen from baleen, like big whales.
Oh,
that
they
have like
eat
those,
the plankton. Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're
brilliant.
They're like surfers. You just got to catch a wave on this worm. The other fucking visually, I mean, it was all visually stunning, but the little mini movie about Fade Rotha on Gendy Prime in black and white.
They have a black sun, and that's why
that was fucking amazing.
That's why the sun absorbs all the color.
Yes, they shot this on infrared cameras and then mapped it to grayscale to give it this eerie look. I love the detail of like the fireworks or like little splotches of ink in the air is like what they would look like.
Because nothing could light up in that in the black sun. So basically, the way it works is anything that's in direct sunlight is devoid of color.
Yeah.
And when you're in the shade, that's the only time that there's color showing.
But I thought,
which is pretty brilliant.
What did you think of Austin Butler as Fade? I mean, I thought
great.
He was fucking menacing.
He was really good.
I liked how he was doing the voice. The voice of the Baron.
Yeah, he's doing the Baron voice. And then I love how those, like, the two of them were drugged. The third guy he was fighting was not drugged. And it just got him excited. And he's like, it was your birthday. I want to give you something special.
See, that, you want to know the reason why they changed that? So in the book, so when there's a Mentat, remember that dude with
who rules? The Awat was cut. His scene was cut.
Who?
He's
in the first movie.
In the first dude, there's this dude whose eyes roll back in his head.
He's got a little black square on his lip.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
He gets captured by the Harkonnens, and he's put to work for them as a Mentat because he's like another human computer.
Right.
And he, on the DL, lets that guy, that guard, go to try and kill Fade. Like, he doesn't, he...
Oh, he was actually
something.
Trying to kill him in the Gladiator.
He's instrumental in the reason why he's not drugged.
Yeah.
He's like, he was trying to actually kill him.
Oh.
But so since that guy cut him out,
didn't he cut him out?
Yeah. He made Baron the reason, like, so he could prove that he's a man.
All these changes, I really think they work. Like, you don't really need a lot of this stuff, and he still has a lot in there. The other big change, Anthony, for instance, is in the book. He is with the Fremen for 2 years. His sister, Alia, is actually born.
Yes, she's born in
there. And she kills the Baron at the end.
She kills the Baron, yeah.
Like, it's kind of wild. But the change he did in here, I kind of loved it because it was creepy as fuck. There was more shots of a fetus than I was expecting in this movie.
The fetus was really weird. That's not in Dune either. No. That's like a new thing.
That was throwing me off too.
Yes, but that moment when she drinks the water, and in my head I'm like, she's fucking pregnant. And then
I kind of like it though.
I love that. The lady was like, oh my God, we made a mistake. She's pregnant. Instantly,
I mean,
the fetus has sentience and she's scheming with her mother. Like, right? Yeah. She's her
like
advisor.
Having a toddler that can speak fluently.
Yeah.
Is also creepy.
Yeah, but having a fetus that just mentally talks to you, holy shit. So it's interesting. Both movies take place in less than a year, if you think about it.
The one thing I was wondering about was the Fremen seem pretty, not too advanced. They don't have a lot of access to stuff.
Yeah.
But before they get, this is even before they get access to the House Atreides
atomic
arsenal.
Weapons, yeah.
How do they have all these rockets and shit?
They got laser guns
and lasers,
they did have like RPGs, didn't they?
But it seemed like
they have weapons.
Yeah, but it seemed like
no. But there've been people smuggling shit to them forever.
And plus, they have tech to make those suits. Also, the suits are kind of, there's tech in them to wick away the water.
They were cool scenes. I just didn't get how they have access to all this unlimited technology to take down the fucking Harkonnen shit.
I love the details of like they drain the moisture from all the bodies and the dead Fremen, and it goes in this giant pool. That was an amazing shot. It was reflective. The opening ambush scene is so cool because the Harkonnen are there, and then you don't expect it, and they just start floating up the side of the fucking.
Those
cliff.
Are the Sardaukar. Cool.
Oh, that was the Sardaukar. Yeah.
No. It was the Harkonnen. You're
it was
right.
It was the Black troops of the Harkonnen. And these silent jetpacks slowly just fucking gliding up. I was like, oh shit, look at that.
That was cool.
What was the opening? So the movie opens with the princess, right?
Yeah, she's giving you a previously on Dune narration, pretty much.
Yeah, she's doing the Dear Diary.
Yes. Yeah, so
are there visuals or is it just a voiceover?
No, they're sitting there she's sitting there.
Because I missed the first 2 minutes.
Like
of the
she's
movie.
Sitting there with Christopher Walken and there's a voiceover and then there's shots of her at a table like writing on this weird diary.
Yeah.
But that's it. And then it cuts to them dropping
she
down.
She explains what happened, that Harkonnen attacked overnight. All the Atreides are wiped out. They all think Paul Atreides is dead. Nobody knows. It's pretty much to catch everyone up to what is going on. You just have to remember that Jessica was pregnant and they're still carrying Jamis's body back because they remember he kills them at the end. So it starts right after the movie ends. And there's an ambush scene, and then they float up, and the bodies just start falling. It was fucking dope. I love their guerrilla warfare, where they got the air straws, they're in the sand, and they literally just fucking fly out of the sand.
When they come out of the sand at the end, that's really awesome.
Did you see that vision that where in the first movie it was him, but then it's Chani in the actual reality?
Yes, when he was in
the
armor, during the fight. There's a lot of good parallels. Like, this movie ends... how the first one starts with Anchani in the desert. If you think about it, they kind of did the same thing. The ambush where Chani's firing rockets and he's got to draw their fire. That was a fucking great scene.
That was awesome. Yeah.
That was good. Into the shadows of the thing.
Yes. And the thing starts moving and he's oh shit. People cheered when she took down that fucking helicopter thing with that thing. And then there's so many great fucking scenes.
Would you have liked this to be rated R?
I don't know if it.
I don't know if it needed it.
I don't think if it needed it. I don't know if it needed it.
But it did feel like when they're stabbing each other at the end.
Yeah.
Fade, Ralitha and fucking Paul Atreides. It felt a little unrealistic that there wasn't blood pouring out of each of them. And Fade, Ralitha, they try to play up that he's a complete psychopath, and it might have been even hit a little harder if when he's killing the people, the women and all that shit.
Oh, yeah, he kills a lot of random people. Oh yeah, but that was all in black and white world too. So
right.
But what did you think of all that little knife fight at the end? It's a callback to when Gurney was training him in the first movie, right? Where he kind of
gets Gurney.
Gurney is Josh Brolin's character.
Oh yeah.
In the first one, they're fighting, and Paul thinks he has him. And Gurney's look down here. And he's got a knife to his stomach. It was very quick because Paul gets stabbed.
Right.
And then suddenly he has stabbed Fade.
No, that was a good action scene. I actually liked how he let that one play out without. And there really wasn't any music, I think. It was just them two fighting.
The backlit shot against the sun is dope. The choreography was cool.
Yeah, he has a real eye for making everything, just beautiful to look at.
Cinematographer Greg Fraser, got to give him props. He's in the scale of things, it's a lot like Gareth Edwards can show scale, but even more, you just feel immersed in this world.
It is very high quality stuff. It really is. I mean, there's nothing looks cheap. Nothing looks
all around, it's every detail, the craftsmanship, the acting, the music, the way everything's integrated, the layers of thematic things. Yes, maybe a couple of things you could have taken out and added to some other things.
Yeah, the biggest problem with this movie is just some of the choices with the story, what was cut out. We didn't need to see a lot of things in the beginning of the story. We could have truncated that at least by 20 minutes and then put other stuff in there. But and then the end seems to end too quickly. So it's kind of lopsided, but that's the only real without going into the actual Dune lore critique I have of this movie. The acting was, everything else was great.
The end, a lot of things happen very quickly, right? Paul has that great speech at the War Council and everybody's on board. And then Shaddam arrives on Arrakis, and then there's a big attack scene where they're coming out of the ground. Paul kills the Baron very quickly. I love that. He's just like, grandfather. He just fucking stabs him in the neck. He's on the floor. And then has the challenge to Shaddam, and then fights Fade, and then kills Fade. And then the whole thing with, like, I'll marry you, and she's like, what the fuck? And he kisses the ring, and then everybody shows up. And instead of, like, going to talk to them, he's like, well, we're going to start this holy war. I guess let's fucking go get him. Mm-hmm. And then just fucking take off. And Chani is not wanting it. She takes off on her own. Like, all that kind of happens very quickly.
Pretty quick, but I literally, in the theater, I went, there's no way they can wrap everything up. There's still so much going on. They got to, there's got to be a Dune 3.
Yes.
There's a lot that's going to happen. And the fact that that the girl wasn't born in this, that's a big one that they left hanging for the third one.
So you've got Alia. Yeah, you have Dune Messiah is the book. But, like, is it going to be Chani versus Paul? You have both sides of this thing.
I mean, I don't know. That's a big change.
Yeah.
Because it's really not Chani versus, it's Chani versus the princess in the
Right.
So it's like, who wins out for Paul Atreides?
The power is going to change him, you know, and he's going to just probably go a little crazy. But really, if you look at it, because Paul and his mother at the end are kind of the villains.
Right.
Kind of, yeah.
They're kind of the bad. Which
well, what's the deal with the Bene Gesserit? What do they want? Are they just wild cards?
Well, they're trying. They're actually in control of everything.
They're really running it.
So their training and all of the stuff that they do, it gives them like kind of like they could see the future. They can see the path. They have a path. And so they take it upon themselves to actually pull all the strings. They basically implanted the Fremen with the idea of a Messiah.
Yeah, hundreds of years ago.
Way a long time ago. And now they're playing the super long game and kind of like taking advantage of opportunities as they come.
What was the deal with one of them getting fucking Fade Rotha?
So this was their plan. They had many options. One was Lady Jessica was supposed to have, their plan was she was supposed to have a daughter, and they were also working on Fade. Her daughter was supposed to mate with Fade.
Who's her daughter?
Lady Jessica's daughter. Not if it were Paul. Wait,
let me jump in here.
She's supposed to have a daughter and have a baby with Fade, and he was going to be the Kwisatz Haderach. But they basically set up shit in every house as a.
So the problem with the Kwisatz Haderach is their supreme like culmination of all of their genetic fucking planning, right? But the Atreides were never considered to be, people that they were considering because they were too impetuous. They were too impulsive. They thought with their hearts too much. They weren't calculating. They weren't able to be controlled. They kind of did things differently than everybody else. And so the Jessica went against them and had a boy when she was supposed to have a girl. So
why did she want to have a boy?
Because she loved Duke Leto and she wanted to please him.
Oh.
And so she kind of broke the rules. She went and threw them a curveball.
She wanted to give him a son.
So they had to find another replacement for as another possible person to groom as the counter to Paul Atreides. And so they went with Fade's kid.
Got it.
They're like, all right, he's not going to be able to take him out now, but when fucking Paul Atreides is an old man, this motherfucker's going to come back and kill
him. Because there's that scene. Fade has impregnated that other Bene Gesserit she was seducing him when she did the box. And I love how he loves pain. But basically, they made up this prophecy as a form of control. But somehow, the prophecy actually comes true in Paul Atreides.
Right.
Which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, well, just like Neo.
Yeah, it's a lot of things.
But they were... It only becomes true because they manipulated it to be true.
They did, but he was already having visions. Like, Paul was special even before the spice and shit.
Right.
So, I don't know.
And because he was taught by his mother the ways of the Bene
Gesserit.
Oh,
yeah.
Which you're not supposed to teach a man because a man's not able to be controlled as much as a woman.
Yeah. And like, she said, the blue juice kills the untrained and males. And he does a little fucking Jesus resurrection, right? He drinks it. He goes into a coma. And her tear combined with the water of life brings him back to life.
I I don't quite know why worms unlock all of this stuff in human beings, but I guess
worm bile.
They probably explain it in the book, but nothing I've seen really explains
it. Was cool it. Though to see some color. It was the only color we were getting. It didn't really bother me that everything was so brown, actually, and the black and white kind of helped break it up a little bit. But
I would have liked to see in this whole Dune duology that we've seen so far is stuff outside of Arrakis to kind of contrast Arrakis.
Well, they give so, you like, planet, the Harkonnen planet.
Yeah, but I would have liked to see the Empire. I would have liked to see Paul Atreides a little bit before, because I think in the miniseries,
yeah,
there's a scene where they're like all at an Imperial thing.
Yeah.
Like all the houses are there and they're interacting with one another before this whole Dune thing happens. And I think it sets up a lot of the players, and I don't know why he didn't do that. It seems like such a smart thing to do.
I know, but I think he wanted it to be Paul and Chani's story, and he needs you to connect with them. Let me ask you this. Did Chalamet pull off this arc, this journey from being...
Yeah, sure.
Not knowing what's going on to actually embracing it. Yeah? Anthony?
I would say so. The only thing with Timothy Chalamet is he's such a small guy.
Yeah, but that's
that
kind of
when
the cool
he fights
thing.
All these other people.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily buy it all the time.
Yeah,
but I mean, he's a really good actor. So yeah, and his, you know, he definitely has range. You know, he in the beginning he's a lot more humble.
Yeah,
as the movie goes along, he starts to kind of really feel himself, as the kids would say.
Yeah,
and by the end, he's rizzed up. You know, he's talking to anybody. He's talking how he wants to talk, when he wants to talk. So yeah,
I love how he's politicking in that scene where he picks his name. He's asking everyone, what's the name of that mouse? Like, he knows the name of the mouse. He knows the answer to these questions. He's ingratiating himself to the people like a politician. Mm-hmm. And you realize that later when he finally like makes that big speech. But
he was taught by a Bene Gesserit, and that's what they do.
Yeah, they're all manipulative.
That's right.
And he doesn't like that they did this, but he doesn't want to do it, but he does it. It's crazy.
There's two parts of him. There's the Bene Gesserit side that's manipulative,
yeah.
But then there's the House Atreides where, you know, that's they're passionate and they care, right?
Yeah.
So he's kind of balancing both.
But his dad wasn't like that, right? Like this revenge he wants. I feel like Duke Leto would not want him to go on this path.
No, he would be more turn the other cheek type.
Yeah,
person.
You know, we saw his character in the first movie where he saves those people instead of just letting him die. But he was going to be a different kind of leader. Who else stole? I feel like the strongest performances were possibly Rebecca Ferguson, Austin Butler.
I was going to say Austin Butler.
Javier Bardem.
I really enjoyed Zendaya in this.
Zendaya was pretty good. Yeah, like
I liked her character. I liked she was very very pleasant to look at.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed. I mean, you just have an all-star cast. Yeah.
Everybody's bringing their A game. I could have used maybe a little bit more making us care about them too as a thing. There's just, you know, the one scene where she's like, "I'll follow you as long as you stay who you are," and it's a sweet kiss and all that.
My friends were fist pumping when they were kissing.
They were cheering for that.
Yeah.
Stellan Skarsgård, I think, is great as the. I mean, everybody was just really good.
Javier Bardem was hilarious.
His lines were, and it was much needed comedy. Like the first one didn't have any humor, and his reactions and his lines were great. I'm all in on Dune, man. And that, like, that's my nitpicks. It's tiny. Is that just like it feels a little bit fast to him making it, accepting his fate, and that's really it. And maybe the Emperor and Princess could have been in there more. But was it too long? It flew by for me. Like I said, I wanted it to keep going.
It could have gone another 10, 15 minutes.
But they also could have trimmed some shit. I will agree.
Yeah,
I would
say that some points it felt too long, but then other points it felt, the way it was edited, it felt like things were happening too fast, too. So it's strangely, in my opinion, the pacing is a little odd.
Yeah.
And that'd be my main complaint.
I think a different cut with some of the other stuff restored.
See,
it would probably
you know,
be
all
better.
You got to do, you trim a little bit out of the first half and expand that back half kind of battle sequence and the scene where all the shit's happening. Expand those a little bit. It's
That marinate a little bit more.
Because people brought up like the scene where they're looking, they find the arsenal and they go unlock the arsenal and they're looking at, they like, do we really need all of that? You could have just cut to like, oh, here's the arsenal and put your hand in here. But there's like other scenes that go on. But these are minor nitpicks because I've never seen a movie that, with Kraft put together so well like
the,
this.
The movie reminds me of the craftsmanship that was displayed in Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah.
I mean, Mad Max Fury Road is a little more, you know, colored, like in terms of like very bright colors.
Yeah.
But both movies are big blockbuster movies, but don't they, like everything looks real. Like it looks insanely
yes
well done, and it doesn't have that fake CGI gloss that most blockbusters
yeah.
have.
Yeah.
Seamless, and there's real care in the filmmaking.
Seamless special effects. Nothing ever took you out of the movie. You felt like you were there, right? Everything seemed real.
Right.
It
felt like you were in the desert the entire
yeah,
time.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt like I was on Spice. It's very Lawrence of Arabia too. From what I understand, like the same kind of things and story arc and stuff. But I wanted more Dune. Here's what's coming actually later this year. HBO Max has a series called Dune Prophecy. It's coming out later this year. It's set 10,000 years before Dune.
Oh, awesome.
It follows the sisters Valya and Tula Harkonnen as they combat forces that threaten the future of humankind and establish the Bene Gesserit. So it's about the founding of the Bene Gesserit. That could be cool.
I like that.
Here's my other question. You think I could watch this movie without watching part one? I think both movies together is an incredible experience, obviously.
No, you can't watch this movie without
watching. You kind of have to watch the first movie, right? I mean,
you're not going to get the same journey.
Yeah. That's part of it is you see this kid.
Yeah.
And then now he's this. And you
see his dad. You
yeah,
see
the motivation.
Everything.
And part one, while I was hard for me to follow, it made it easier for me to enjoy part two because I was able to get like kind of take in all the characters and understand, okay, these are all the chess pieces. All right, here's this. Because this movie not only has all the characters from the first one, but then it adds more chess pieces.
Yes.
So then if you're trying to catch up in part two,
yeah,
you know, without having seen part one, it's just going to be a really hard experience.
Well, you got to see part one. Yes.
I think that this movie makes the first movie better.
Yes, I will agree.
It complements it very well. It elevates it a little bit. So it does its job. That's exactly what it needs to do.
I mean, he nailed it. Part one is the setup. Part two is the fucking payoff. And he absolutely fucking nailed. It's so satisfying. It was a very satisfying experience.
But it doesn't end. There's still so much hanging on this.
I know, but that made me mad because I was like, fuck, don't stop now. I need to know what happens to Paul.
So all the houses are coming, right, to take him on?
They do not accept his ascendancy to emperor. They do not agree with it, so he's just going to fucking take them out and control them, I guess.
What planet are they on?
They're on Arrakis still the whole time. They're on Arrakis.
So if I could try and add a little bit of color to this. So all of these planets, all of these people, they were once from Earth, and they spread out through the galaxy and form their own galactic planets and figured out how to do this whole like traveling through time, space warping and all that other stuff.
They are from Earth. Yeah. It's the year 10191.
Yeah.
So that's
So all of this stuff is happening. So all of this like Arabic stuff and Messiah stuff, that stuff that from here.
Yeah, and I love the meshing
that's
of
echoing through time.
Christianity and Islam. You see this all the time in this, like they mash together and it's evolved and combined, and it's so cool. The details are great.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
It's a very, very, very well done movie based on a book that was very rich, and you can see
a
like
dense fucking book. Now people have told me, like, you read the 100 pages of this book and you're like, what the fuck is happening? Like, it's that kind of book. So for him to pull this off and streamline the unfilmable novel and actually make it a fucking like a mass appeal blockbuster, this is quite a fucking achievement. He's like he's the one to beat right now as far as the director.
Imran's normally pretty happy, but I can tell
he's
over the moon for this one.
I still think Lord of the Rings did it better,
but
it's very respectable.
We're gonna rate it, but here, I want to answer these questions. Where does it fall for you in terms of comparing it to the first movie? And in this list of science fiction sequels, is it in the conversation of The Empire Strikes Back, Aliens,
yes,
Terminator 2, Lord of the Ring 2?
Of course.
Yeah.
Is it that level?
Absolutely.
Okay, right.
That's not even a question. Yeah, like, this is a,
okay.
You could tell by the monetary success that it's having and the fact that all three of us like it. You know, so that's a big when we all like something.
And like the box office is great because he's definitely getting a third one. And I'll wait 5 years. Take your time. He's probably burnt out. I don't care. Take your time. It's fine.
But where does he rank in terms of directors? Is he the best guy right now?
I mean, right now he is up there with your Christopher Nolan's and your.
I really feel he's kind of like, I think he's ascending to Nolan levels, but I like his movies. I like Sicario and I like the Blade Runner that he did and I like Prisoners. So like he does pretty good movies, but he hasn't done as many as you think. Mm-hmm. And this is the biggest thing he's done.
Oh yeah.
By far.
Absolutely.
But the thing is he's only gotten bigger.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he did Sicario and then Arrival, which was nominated. Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Was, you know, that was something that you know, not a lot of people thought, you know, he could bring back Blade Runner. He did that well, and then he's done Dune, and he just, like, everything he does just gets bigger and bigger.
Slowly, he's smart at picking things, yes, and then it gets, and I think, I don't know what he's going to do next. Maybe you do something smaller just as a break.
I just think dialogue is good, and you shouldn't shy away from it.
I mean, speaking of no dialogue, though, the whole sandworm scene, there's no dialogue, but that fucking shot of Paul finally rising up, the camera's like on the worm and he's kneeling down and he slowly stands. Oh, fucking people were cheering. That shit is dope. That was an amazing
shot. They did a great job. They did a great job.
They built that fucking thing and like shot it in the desert.
It looks real.
I don't know how they did it, but it looks fucking real. You get the physics of it.
So as in terms of special effects, like he's almost there with James Cameron.
Yes.
I would say.
Oh yeah. I mean, he's up there. I mean, it's seamless, the special effects.
Yeah.
Nothing looked fake. I mean, nothing.
Yeah. I think James Cameron's a better overall storyteller director, but he's just working with shitty material, James Cameron.
That he continues to want to work with.
It's not fair to compare, like, Dune, one of the most, like, beloved novels that influenced so much of sci-fi, but he's definitely up there with James with visuals.
Rugs, did you like it better or worse than the first movie?
No, I like them both. Okay. I like them both together. I think that this one kind of ups the ante and brings the story forward and things happen. Like a lot more things happen. Like the first movie is just his father gets betrayed and he has to run with the Fremen.
Yeah, it's family betrayal.
There's really nothing going on and it plods along.
Yeah.
Doing that very simple story. This one, a lot of things are going on. A lot of things have to happen. And they managed to get to it all. So even though the first half is a little.
All right, give me a number. What would you give this movie?
I think it's a 9, no problem.
All right, Anthony. Yeah. You like this one better than the first one?
This one a lot better than the first one.
I know that
it's not my favorite. You know, I'm not going to throw on Dune. I don't know that I'll ever fully vibe with the way Denis Villeneuve paces his movies.
Yeah.
But it's pretty awesome. I mean, there's an argument to be made that this is almost perfect. I would probably rate it I think a 9 is a fair rating. I think there are some nitpicks, but objectively it's fucking well done. It's a really,
that's just
really
a
well
technical
done
achievement. You have to give it to the guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like I don't really like, I'm not really like 100% on how he chose to tell the story, but it was very effective in what he chose to do. So
it's very, very, very high level blockbuster movie making.
It's the best shit you're going to see right now that he's giving us.
It's probably an early contender. I was reading that if this would have come out when it was supposed to come out,
right? It was delayed. It was going to
Nolan's Oppenheimer might have been shaking his boots.
Yes, he should thank them for pushing it back because I mean the first one, like I think, won 6 Oscars. This one's going to win a fucking boatload of Oscars, possibly. I do like it better than the first one, but I can't wait to sit down and watch both of these back to back from the comfort of my sofa when it's on streaming. It's going to be amazing. As far as it is in the conversation, like you guys said, I'd do like Empire Strikes Back, Aliens, Terminator 2, and then this fucking Dune 2.
As far as sci-fi sequels?
Yes, sci-fi sequels. One, easily one of the best. I'm going to give it a 9.5. It's almost a perfect movie. It is. You can call it a fucking masterpiece. I think you can call it a masterpiece without hyperbole. It's fucking amazing.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like you can't, when something of quality, like it's acted well, directed well, maybe not edited great, but like directed well, and all the CG, all the effects look really, really well.
Everything's hitting.
All the like the costuming and the set design is all on par. The music's great, and it does elicit. If it does elicit a reaction from people, yeah. like emotional,
yeah.
like you can't just be like, okay, you can't discount it.
Yeah, and it does.
Right.
It does. I could talk about this movie for hours. We're not going to do that. Let's find out what our listeners thought in News from the Nation.
It's time for News from the Nation.
It's time for News from the Nation.
Even that sounded drunk.
It stinks. It stinks.
Do I sound drunk?
It stinks.
Trey D's nuts. here we go. We had a couple of comments from the Facebook group about Dune 2. Roka Salu, formerly known, I think, as Rokas Barokas. He says, stylistically and visually near perfection, the script and dialogue was sometimes a little weak, but only compared to the rest of the parts, which were incredible. But the stunning performances negated that. The amount of face close-ups allowing the talent to act the shot out of the intimate and emotionally loaded moments created such a personal experience. I love the sound design, too. Yes.
Yeah.
Jeff Chaffman says, one of the best movies I've ever seen, and I'm a harsh critic. Great acting, the visuals, the action, score, plot, etc. I had to pee so bad during the movie, but I held it in because I didn't want to miss a second.
Good you might want to check out Gladiator, Jeff.
Good for you. Oh, what? Gladiator? You like movies about gladiators?
One of the best movies ever seen.
This movie's better than Gladiator.
No way.
Come on.
No fucking way.
I like Gladiator better.
You like Gladiator better?
But like, I mean, this
for
one,
sure.
But this one's great. I mean, it's great.
This one's great also.
Gladiator only needed one movie to tell its story.
That's a good point. Good point. This is a dense book. Jose Ibarra says, I fucking loved it. There was a lot to love about this movie. It was a near masterpiece. First off, the score throughout the whole movie, the music had me feeling every emotion that it was trying to convey. Flawless. I'm going to just cut in here. The Hans Zimmer score is great, but yes, the music, the sound integration was like the attention to that detail was amazing. He says, the set pieces were beautiful, and as much as there was so much orange/sand in Arrakis, every other planet had its own unique feel and color palette. This movie felt like a big cinematic experience. The cast was on their A-game, especially Zendaya, most of all Austin Butler. As Fate Rautha, he at times reached Heath Ledger Joker-esque levels. Which brings me to my nitpicks. He should have had more screen time. It would have been an all-time performance had he been in it more. Let him cook, he says. Also, I think the movie would have greatly benefited from 30 more minutes, more Butler, and a more drawn-out final battle. But when they got through to the south, through the end, seemed very rushed. There was no sense of how much time was passing.
That's a good point. That you don't know really how long this stuff is going on.
Yeah, it's all kind of happens very quickly. I mean, there was a lot of battles at the end, right? Like Gurney kills Raban really quickly, but like how much room?
Yeah, it was
had?
Like Final Wars.
Yeah, it was like Final Wars. He's going through kaiju after kaiju. Like one of them, you have to make special. And
I don't think it's ever. I don't think this will probably be the first and last time Dune and Final Wars will ever be mentioned in the same sentence.
I don't know how that happens.
I figured out how to do
it. We just did it, listener. That's right. Talking nerd. Only here.
An all-time great movie. Probably one of the worst movies ever. Horribly crafted movies you'll ever see in Final Wars.
Yeah.
Overall, no positive responses from everyone. There's a very long post from Jesse Rodriguez. Just go to the group and read it. He has lots of thoughts. I'm not going to read it here, but everybody seems to love this movie. I love this movie. Let's roll into what are we watching? Because, like I said, what the first movie did was make me want more Dune. The second movie, I came home, I was like, I need more Dune. I almost watched the David Lynch movie over again.
My God.
Because I was like, I need more Dune.
There's stuff in there that they forgot to do in this movie, too.
And then I remembered about the documentary Jodorowsky's Dune. It's on Max. It's an hour and a half. Anthony, have you heard of this, Jodorowsky's Dune? Probably not.
No.
If you're into Dune, if you have not seen this doc, you must watch this documentary. So here's the thing. We've talked about how Dune and John Carter has influenced all sci-fi. It's true, but there's a very important piece missing. It's Dune plus Jodorowsky. So this guy, Alejandro Jodorowsky, Spanish, weird Spanish filmmaker, like a surrealist, an experimental filmmaker, made some weird fucking movies in the 60s. He wants to make Dune in the 70s. He gathers an fucking incredible group of talent to do the storyboards. He gets Mobius. Mobius draws out 3,000 drawings. They storyboard this whole movie and he puts it in.
And it looks amazing.
He puts it in this book. So you can argue Jodorowsky was actually the first person to actually visualize any of this shit, right? Hmm. He put it all down paper. This book was given to all the studios. They were filming the movie. It was going to cost like $15 million, which is a lot back then. They needed another five. They were trying to shop it around to Hollywood. Nobody would fucking touch it. But everybody has a copy of this book, and I've heard about this book for years. Everyone has seen this. In fact, there are scenes from other sci-fi movies that are lifted from storyboards from this book. Like, so his storyboards plus Frank Herbert's Dune together is, if it wasn't for that, we would not have probably Star Wars or Terminator or Matrix,
yeah,
or Flash Gordon or anything.
Moby, it all goes back to movies.
Let me just tell you, this is who he wanted in the movie. This is the talent. First of all, he got Mobius, a fantastic comic book artist. He got H.R. Giger, before he did Aliens, to design structures and buildings for him. He got Keith Carradine. He wanted Keith Carradine to play Duke Leto. He had Mick Jagger agreed to play Fade. He wanted Orson Welles to play the Baron Harkonnen. He got Salvador Dali to agree to play the Emperor.
Oh, my God.
For Paul, he was literally training his own son, Brontis Jodorowsky, as if he was fucking Paul Atreides. He started teaching him how to fight and sword skills, and he was literally turning him into an actual Paul Atreides. He got Pink Floyd to do the music. This is easily the greatest movie that never got made that influenced all the fucking modern sci-fi that we love.
It's a great documentary.
You know who's in this documentary? Devin Faraci.
That's right.
And Faraci. Yes, and Drew McWeeny from Ain't It Cool News. So here's an example. Devin Faraci points out, you know how when you see like the Terminator or a robot first person point of view, there's the heads up display. We've seen it so many times with all the screen in front of you and the words and the drawings. The very first, Faraci's like, I think the very first instance of that anywhere is in this storyboard. Like, it's in that storyboard, a heads-up display for a robot. And nobody had done it on screen until people started seeing this thing. The designs Geiger made for the Baron's fortress are in Prometheus. Remember in Prometheus, there's that big round mound fortress with a skull head on top of it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was originally the design from Jodorowsky's Dune for the Baron's fortress. So, like, lightsaber battles, some of the choreography, some of the shit. Everybody saw this book, and they lifted from it.
Yeah, you can get the book now. You can order
it. I thought the book was rare. I saw one. There was one screenshot of it went sold at auction for, like, $42,000. In the movie, they say there's only two copies of that book left.
I thought they started mass producing it.
I think they should make a cartoon out of it. The doc is amazing. It's so good, but I did not realize how influential Jodorowsky's
Dune
is.
Imagine somebody makes an anime out
of it. Somebody should make an animated cartoon out of Jodorowsky's Dune. Just do it however long it takes. Like, he imagined shit that was way ahead of its time. Shit that George Lucas wouldn't even try making Star Wars just a few years later. Now, you think about how smart George was to take Dune, to mix it with samurais, to mix it with westerns, to make it toyetic, toy friendly, to make it more mass market friendly, where the heroes are good guys. There's clear good guys and bad guys instead of having a hero that's kind of like you're not with his choices at the end. He takes all this and he makes fucking Star Wars, and that's it. Like, we could have, if they made this movie, it would have been a whole different fucking future, I think.
Yes.
Anyways, it's fucking great.
Wake up.
Watch Jodorowsky's Dune. It's fucking great. But there's another.
It runs just over the moon. For dude,
it was.
Dune
right now. I got so. I really enjoyed that doc, and it was great after watching Dune 2 to see another version of these designs. Have you seen? What are you watching, Anthony? Did you watch anything? I watched a lot of shit.
I could see that. No, I didn't really haven't really watched anything.
Rux, there's another Dune thing that you watched that I don't have access to, but I'm kind of curious about.
Yeah, I bought the DVD set when I heard that they were making a new Dune movie like a couple years ago, 3 years, 4 years ago during COVID, I think.
Yeah.
So I had they sell it. So the miniseries plus the series they made after called Children of Dune.
Children of Dune? What is this
starring
about?
James McAvoy.
Oh, McAvoy's in it.
Susan Sarandon.
Oh, shit.
And some other people.
What was this about? When does this take place?
No, this is like comes right after Dune.
Oh.
So the story starts with Muad'Dib's jihad, and now he's married to the princess and he's got Chani there. And you know, he's banging Chani, but he's gotta like make appearances with the other one. So she's basically like cucking this girl.
Nice.
And basically it's like they're both kind of competing with each other in certain ways for the attention of Muad'Dib. And so there's that. And then there's his sister. His sister was born, like, she was in the womb, she was conscious.
Right.
She could speak and all that stuff. And when she was like a little kid, she came out of the womb speaking and like whatever, like as a baby. And so this kid, now she's a woman, she's like a 17 or something, and she's a force to be reckoned with. And Paul Atreides, he's still having the visions, and he has this crazy ass vision of this golden path that he has to walk, and he has to decide how to walk it. Like, is he going to do the things that are required of him that he sees in the future? And this is all happening with some Game of Thrones shit with his family members, his mother, the Emperor's family that are trying to get back in charge, and the space guilds are now involved, and they're like trying to, they're all working together to fuck over Paul Atreides.
Is it good? I kind of want to watch this. Anything, dude? No, I'm like, I'd be
good. Meaning, like,
it's a Sci-Fi Channel like, production.
Is it as good as the movies that you just watched? No.
I know it's not going to be.
It's a sci-fi series that's basically a soap opera.
But is the soap opera good? Is it a good story?
If you want to know what happens in Dune, then yeah, okay, it's good.
I might have to watch this. I might have to read these books.
I would probably, instead of watching the series, if you can read, you're a reader, then
audiobook.
I would read the
book. Audiobook. As long as
audiobooks, yeah.
I might have to audiobook these.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Real quick. I'm going to run down the shit I watched, because a lot of shit came out and I had some time and I caught up on it. Guess what? There's a new Walking Dead show out.
Of course there is. And you're watching it.
Milking it. I had to check out the first episode. It's called Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live. It is the story of Rick Grimes and Michonne. Remember, does anybody remember where Rick's story ended on The Walking Dead?
Didn't he die?
Sort of, no. There was a bridge, there was walkers, he blew it up, and his body washed down this river, and that one weird girl found him, and then there was helicopters, and she's like, I have a bee. And you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? And they airlifted him the fuck out of there. And that was like season 9, maybe 10. That was the last we saw of Rick Grimes. So this first episode fills in where he went, what's going on. Michonne is looking for him. And then I'm just going to spoil a little bit.
Spoiler alert.
They finally do the thing to Rick Grimes that was a big thing in the comics that they never did on the show. Ruggs, can you guess what I'm talking about?
He loses an eye?
Not an eye.
Or, penis?
No. In the comics, Rick loses a hand, remember?
Oh, yeah. He loses something.
He loses a hand early on the show. They made Aaron. Was it Aaron? He ends up losing his hand and shit. But in the first episode of this show, he's shackled to get away. He fucking chops his hand off. So whatever. It was all right. It wasn't bad. I don't know if I'll continue. I just watched the first episode. But I was like, oh, fuck, it's Rick Grimes and Michonne.
Zero interest
Remember
in that.
Rick Grimes?
Yeah, me neither.
Remember Rick was on the show? It was good. Okay. The other thing I watched, I started the Avatar The Last Bender, Airbender series. I've just watched the first episode on Netflix, live action.
It fills you in pretty good, yeah, right?
Solid setup. It was actually a decent setup. And I, yeah, it was fun. I didn't mind. The kid didn't annoy me as much as I was afraid he would. But the lore, the whole world building, they did a good job with Appa and the flying fucking bison and the bending. And then I was like, oh, I wonder what bending power I would rather have. Air, water, fire, earth. I don't know. It's a good question. Maybe fire, maybe air. I don't know. There's a lot of benefits and pros and cons to all of them. I think I will finish the series because it's good. It's good. I caught up on Halo season 2. I watched all 5 episodes.
Oh, you want that must have been good if you wanted to watch all 5.
I wanted to get to episode 4 because everyone was like, episode 4 is amazing. And it was. There's a fucking, it's a crazy battle on Reach with the Covenant. And it is like Jose Ibarra said in our hangout, it's like Saving Private Ryan meets Starship Troopers. And it was it was a little bit that. And like the battle continues in episode 5. It's not bad. He doesn't have his helmet on and a lot. And it's a little confusing sometimes what planet they're on when they jump locations. But
it's got Bokeem.
It's got not David Chappelle in it, which is always great. He's not David Chappelle.
My favorite part is like, so the whole fucking place is going down and Bokeem's trying to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
And then the lady's like, no, you got to go this way. He's like, fuck you. I'm not going that way. And then he's like, oh, shit. She's right. That's the way I got to go. And he fucking ends up following her out. That was funny.
Yeah, Dr. Halsey from the first season. It's not bad. Some of the fucking fight scenes and them coming out of the smoke is cool.
It's got moments. Yeah. It's not great, but it's got moments.
So I'm already 5 episodes in. I'll probably continue watching that. But
how's Shogun?
But then I watched probably the best fucking thing I've seen on TV.
Is that good, huh?
I got to watch this. I've been hearing nothing but good things about this.
First 2 episodes of Shogun are out. Episode 3 will be out by the time this post comes out on Tuesdays. Holy fuck, is this an amazing show. Big budget. Amazing detail. The culture, the story is great. They set it up great. Essentially, the Shogun has died. There's a absence of power, and all the people are in this council, and they got to figure out who to lead. And then this European dude on a boat manages to find Japan. This is like 1600 feet of Japan. The Portuguese were the only ones who knew where Japan was, and so they traded everything through them. So these Europeans kind of accidentally stumble and find Japan. Nobody believed it exists. And he gets captured, and Hiroyuki Sanada plays a lord named Toranaga, who the whole council is trying to get, but he needs to fight them off. Anna Sawai is great. It's really fucking good. Watching this along with Avatar, though, did confuse me a little, because I'm watching Shogun and the samurai battles, and I'm like, why doesn't he just throw a fireball or something? What are you waiting for? I was like, oh, wait, that's the other fucking...
Start airbending right now. That's the fucking other
show. Shit. Because they're both similar things.
You talk about Asian representation. You got 2 big budget shows, huge casts.
Yeah.
Like, and you're not even counting Warrior and the other stuff that's being made, too.
There's a lot going on. Japanese shit out there. Like, Blue-Eyed Samurai was also very good.
Yeah.
But Avatar is similar, right? They're waiting for the Avatar, and the fire people are in charge, and there's a gap in power, and it's very similar to Shogun. I was getting confused. But I fucking highly, and the first 2 episodes, I recorded them off the TV with commercials. They run 1.5 hours. So minus commercials, it's like 1.10 hours. Maybe they're really long. They're like movies. It's fucking good.
So Shogun's on TV.
Shogun is on Hulu. It's on FX. And then
it's not on Hulu.
And then it goes on Hulu. Yes, it's on Hulu, but it's on FX first. Highly recommend Shogun. It is quality. Holy shit. It is like, Game of Thrones.
All right, I got to check
that out.
Yeah,
I might have to check that out.
Holy shit, yes. Everybody's going to be talking about this fucking
show. What else have you watched? Anything else?
I think that's it.
How do you do that all in a week?
It's not easy. I got to break things up. I got to fucking find time and edit the show and record another podcast and go to work.
See, Imran doesn't seem like he fucks around on YouTube like I do. I just will watch YouTube for 6 hours.
I need research on things, you know.
Oh, yeah. Here's what I've been doing on YouTube. I mentioned this before, but I'll say it again. I've been just watching people get arrested.
Okay.
I still am down the train of watching people get arrested. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
How do you find that?
Well, now it's just all over my feed because the algorithm.
Watch one and
I've watched 4 or 5 and now it's just all over.
Did you see the one where the girl gets arrested for masturbating on the beach?
No, not yet.
Oh, I think I've heard about that.
It's a funny one.
Yeah.
My favorite right now are people being fucked up at the airport and getting arrested.
That's always good.
That's called Locked Up Abroad. That's a TV show.
People trying to get on the flight drunk and then getting pissed off when they're denied. That's fun.
Man,
A tale as old as time. Yeah.
That's never
drunk at the
that's
airport.
Never not going to be fun to watch. That's the thing. It's all time entertainment.
People getting drunk and arrested.
Yeah, and getting arrested. Yeah. The whole channel's about
that. You really appreciate the shit cops deal with. It's like, right? Oh my God.
It's been like this.
Jesus Christ. You got to deal with people like this.
It's fucking asshole. Yeah. All right. Well, that's fun stuff. That's it for this week, everybody. Ruggs, where can the listener find you?
Rug Boy Show on Twitter, otherwise known as X.
Follow him. Anthony, where can the listener find you?
I don't know. I haven't thought about it. I don't have anything good this week. I don't know where you're going to find me. I don't know where. I don't have any plans. So, yeah, you could find me somewhere.
Aimlessly wandering the streets. Listen,
gallivanting. That's
yes, he'll be gallivanting. Yeah. He'll be cajoling. He'll be canoodling. Lots of things happen. In the meantime, spread the show. Share the show. Post it. Tweet it to someone. Text it to someone. We'd appreciate it. Thank you for listening to the Jock and Nerd Podcast. My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the Jock.
He's the Nerd.
We'll peep you next time.
I fucking loved it.
I really don't give a shit.
I'm pumped.
Yeah, me too.
Me too.
Good thing I offered you a chance to be a cop, and you blew it.
Jock and Nerd.